I wonder when in your lifetime you have had an experience of feeling desperate. Maybe it was a time when you were spending your last few dollars and weren't sure where your food money or rent money was going to come from the next month. Maybe you were in an emergency room or in a hospital, in a doctor's office, hearing news that made you want to scream. Maybe you were watching your child or someone else you love commit suicide slowly by some drug of choice. Maybe you had just been laid off or fired from a job that you desperately needed. Maybe you were trying to fight the school system for something that was absolutely necessary for your child or someone else's child. Think about it for a minute, a time when you were so desperate that you felt like you would do almost anything to see that your problem was solved. The woman in our story this morning was just that desperate as any of us have probably ever been. She had a daughter. It says in the story that her daughter was demon-possessed, which in the New Testament can be a little bit confusing for us. In the New Testament, when it says somebody was demon-possessed, it means either physically or mentally something was very wrong. And if it was physical, it was to the point where the person was not in their right mind. We're never quite sure which it was, so we're not sure with this woman's daughter. Was it mental? Was it physical? Either way, she was not in her right mind, and this mother was desperate. We have no idea all the things she's tried so far. We can just imagine. And so at some point, she must have heard that Jesus was coming to town, Jesus the healer. She wasn't a Jewish woman, so she wouldn't have been one of his followers. But somehow she got wind of it. There was no event scheduled. It was just Jesus in a particular town at a certain time. And so this woman, who has no standing at this point, finds her way to where she thinks Jesus will be and begins to shout. Feeling desperate enough that she is yelling out in a crowd full of people, asking Jesus to help her. And Jesus didn't respond. She kept yelling. So again, desperate enough that even when being ignored, she would continue to yell. The disciples, compassionate group that they are, heard her yelling and said, "Send her away! Is she ever irritating? You've probably run into people like that in your lifetime. Just get rid of this person. I don't want to hear it. Maybe we've been people like that in our lifetimes. But the woman would not give up. She was too desperate. So somehow, you can imagine there's always a bit of a crowd around Jesus. Not that the disciples acted as bodyguards, but it might have been something sort of like that, where they walked together in a crowd, so it was difficult to actually get to Jesus. This woman was brave enough that she somehow, the picture I have is, boy, she must have used those elbows. She somehow elbowed her way in through the rest of the people that surrounded Jesus and knelt on the ground in front of him. Have you ever been so desperate that you knelt on the ground? She knelt on the ground in front of him and pleaded, please, please, my daughter has a demon. We need your help. Please, you can heal her. And it was in that moment that Jesus finally responded to her. Only what comes out of his mouth doesn't seem so compassionate. Basically, what he tells her is, I can't help you. You're not one of the people to whom I was sent. You are not a Jew. Only what he says is actually way more offensive than that. How can I give the children's food to dogs? Basically refers to her as a dog, which commentators have tried for years to somehow mess with. Only there's not the ability to mess with it, because it really was referring to her as a dog. She continued on in the midst of that. But, she said back to Jesus, even the dogs are allowed to have the scraps from the table. Even the dogs. And in that moment, Jesus seemed to have had a change of heart. After saying, I can't help you. You're not one of the children of Israel. I can't help you. Instead, Jesus said, woman, your faith is amazing. Your daughter is healed. And then sent her on her way. It is a remarkable glimpse. I don't know how you were brought up theologically. I was brought up and taught that God, and therefore Jesus, were always the same. So the big saying when I was younger was, Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Meaning, don't mess with him. You can't change him. And so here we have this incredible picture of Jesus, who, remember, is a mirror of God to us, who is changed by this encounter, this close-up encounter with this woman who was absolutely desperate. It's an odd story for us because we think that Jesus' ministry was to everybody from the beginning. And yet here in the Gospel of Matthew, we read, Jesus came for the lost sheep of Israel. And then it expands out. So it's an incredible picture of a Jesus who seemed to have a change of heart by this encounter. And so it's an incredible look at How are we changed? I was having a conversation with somebody last week about the fact that our church is involved in joining hands against hunger, and our partners are down in Bolivia. We were talking about how hard it is to kind of get the passion going around this partnership, and that those who are most passionate are the people who have been to Bolivia and met our Bolivian partners and been able to see the situation firsthand. Well, it's true that's how we're changed. Most of us, when we have seen or heard or interacted with somebody or something, that's the point at which we become much more passionate. Whether it's right here in Oakland or in Bolivia, it is that person-to-person relationship that ends up impacting us in some way. Jesus seemed to have been transformed by this woman. I almost picture that he must have heard himself in the story before this, talking to the scribes and Pharisees about being so caught up in the rules that their hearts were not in the right place. So here he is with this woman, probably thinking to himself, listen to this rule I'm spouting off. The food is for the children. He was changed. This relationship ended up changing him. I told many of you, most of you know, that in July I was at a training for transitional pastors, what used to be called interim pastors. And at the training, pastors were gathered from all over the country, and you can imagine that we shared stories together. I had mostly good stories to share, I want you to know. But I heard many stories, and I can't tell you how many stories had to do with the fact that congregations are very resistant to change and being changed. And so we had a whole discussion about how part of the reason for that is that most of us are not likely to change unless we are feeling pain of some sort. So it could be discomfort, it could be deep disappointment, it could be fear, it could be something, but it's kind of that pain that then motivates us to change. That without some kind of motivation, most of us are wired more for things staying the same. And so we heard about a particular story. Actually, I think we heard three different versions of this story. The story went something like this. A congregation made the decision to invest a great deal of money, I mean more than $100,000, in a magnificent organ. And then once the organ was installed, in order to feel like the best use of it was being made, all of the music in the service was to be played through the organ. And year after year, what happened was the congregation slowly began to dwindle for a variety of reasons. And so when it was that 40 people were sitting in a sanctuary that could seat 450 people, the pain got to be quite a bit. And the congregation looked around and looked at their now half-time pastor and said, "Oh no, what are we going to do?" And in this discussion that we had as pastors, one of the things we talked about was there's kind of this fine line that happens. This fine line of when change is possible and when it's a bit too late. and the sadness that comes with it's a bit too late. And so one of the pastors threw out the question, well, how could we have helped that congregation to feel the pain sooner? Somebody else said, well, maybe that's not the best question to ask. Because often we wait until we're desperate to do what is required. And sometimes by that point, sometimes it's a bit late. I want to invite you this morning. So my hesitation right there is I have struggled and struggled with how to end this sermon. How's that for honesty? And here's why. Because as I look at all of you and as I think about various stories that you have shared with me, what I realize is that we are in all different places. Some of you are feeling pain so viscerally that it's as if you are already on your knees and pleading. Some of you have somebody in your life who has been pleading to you for help. Some of you are wanting to be changed in some way and not sure how. You're not exactly feeling the pain yet. So I wasn't quite sure what to come up with in terms of a neat, okay, so here's the thought I want to leave you with. So what I decided to do instead is invite you. I want to invite you into this story. I want to invite you to spend some time thinking about what is the invitation of this story to you? What is the word from this story that is for you? I'd love to hear from you as you spend some time with this, what you think the word in this story is to you. The other invitation is to think about what the word in this story is for all of us as a community. They're different things. This story is an invitation to you. Amen.